Conventional wisdom about birth order says firstborn children are conscientious, eager to please adults, and bossy. Middle children are supposed to be more likely to rebel, but also more invested in a peacemaking role within families. And lastborns are thought to be easygoing, funny, and maybe a little spoiled. But is any of that true? And how much do those beliefs play into parents' decisions about how many children to have and how to treat them? From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Lynn Bearhurst started researching these things around the time she got pregnant with her second child. And she discovered that while a lot has been written about birth order and personality, many of our assumptions are based on evidence that has more to do with age development than birth order. Bearhurst is a staff writer at the Dutch journalism platform De Correspondent and author of Second Thoughts on Having and Being a Second Child. She recently wrote a piece for Time magazine called Does Birth Order Really Determine Personality? Here's what the research says. Lynn, welcome to Think.
Thank you for having me.
So you were the firstborn in your family. What kinds of classic first child personality characteristics did you have as a kid?
Well, I would say I had the whole package. So very conscientious, very ambitious in school, having a sense of responsibility that definitely for my younger sister centered on bossiness, and also quite neurotic.
And your sister, who is the second born, how is she different from you?
Well, she was definitely more easygoing, a lot more outgoing, very social, very rebellious. Where I was always, working on my homework, she was usually in front of the TV watching shows. And as we got older, she would work in every trendy bar in town and sort of make friends as she went along.
So when you were pregnant with your second child, your son, you found yourself worried that maybe your daughter had already claimed all the unfair advantages. What are the benefits supposed to be, broadly speaking, that are unique to firstborn children?
Well, I mean, I guess also whether or not you consider certain things a benefit might depend on maybe your own position in the family. So as a firstborn who was, conscientious and worked really hard in school, I thought, well, it's good to be the firstborn because this will get me, this is going to get me far in life. But obviously you could differ with that assessment of whether it's beneficial or not to be a firstborn. But there is some research that's been done mostly by economists that has found that firstborns do indeed tend to have a slightly higher IQ and also tend to do a little bit better in school on average. And now if you think that is, a good thing in life, then you could say that this is an advantage of being a firstborn.
So in previous centuries, of course, laws of primogeniture actually meant that firstborns, or at least firstborn sons, stood to inherit everything, while later-born children would receive less or nothing. That's not really a thing anymore in Western culture, right?
No, it's true. Although, I guess it depends where you look. For instance, if you look at the royal family, which is a small minority in Western culture, but, primogeniture laws are still very much in place there. And maybe even informally, I was watching this HBO series Succession. I don't know if you've seen it, but there also the drama starts because the firstborn son is supposed to inherit the family business. And then the father decides sort of in the last moment to just, throw all that up in the air and the siblings start to compete. So, you could say in some senses it still exists, but I think most parents in Western cultures have decided that, hierarchy within families is not a good thing. We are all sort of democracies and all our children should receive the same amount of opportunity and investment by parents.
How good are we at actually treating them the same?
It's really hard to treat them the same because every child is born basically into a different family, right? So a firstborn is born to, two adults who have, who become parents at the moment the child is born, whereas a secondborn is born into a family that has an older sibling. And if you have a thirdborn, it's again a different kind of family. So it's basically impossible to give them the exact same starting point. And then also the position that someone has in the family tree influences, for example, the amount of time and energy that parents can invest in each child. So a firstborn will sort of enjoy, full-time parental attention for the first few years of their life, whereas a secondborn has to share all that from the start, but then also gets the attention from an older sibling. So even though we want to give them the same, it's not really an option.
You kept hearing the expression when you were pregnant for the second time, you have your first child for yourself, but you have the second for the first. What does that mean exactly?
Yeah. So what people mean by that is that, you know, when you have a child for the first time, you do it because, I don't know, you want to be a parent. Maybe you've always dreamed of being a parent, or you've just recently become very curious about what it would like. But in any case, it's a decision that you make for yourself. But then this decision to have a second child is often made with the premise that it's good for kids to have siblings. And so people will think, the second child, we're not just having it for ourselves, but we're having it for our first child so that he or she doesn't end up being an only child.
But of course, you have that second child. If you have it for the first child, you're also depriving the first child of all that marvelous, undivided attention.
I know. It's very paradoxical. Mm. And it's also, I mean, the other thing is also that the premise that it's good for children to have a sibling basically means that we think it's not good for children to be an only child, which is also quite an assumption to make.
Yeah, I always think it's kind of unfair the way we act as if only children are all damaged in some way that children with siblings aren't. There are a lot of factors at play there.
Absolutely. And also the evidence, you know, the research into differences between only children and children with siblings doesn't bear it out at all.
So we should be clear, and you state in the book that you very much wanted your second pregnancy. You were excited to have two children. But did you worry that your daughter would suffer from suddenly having to share attention with a baby brother?
Oh, yes, I did. And also I worried that she might, you know, maybe be jealous or feel out of place. And I think that's also a fear that wasn't really abated when I started, you know, looking for literature about what it means to have a second child, because a lot of the articles that I found and also books had titles like How to Survive Your Second Child or How to Deal with Sibling Rivalry. There seemed to be this assumption that while on the one hand I was giving my daughter something, you know, a sibling, I was also taking something away from her.
Hmm. And it seems like in the 20th century, we became sort of obsessed with the idea of sibling rivalry as this incredibly toxic force. It's not necessarily a horrible thing in every family.
No, it's not. And it's interesting because when I started reading up on sibling rivalry, I realized that, you know, that hadn't been something that parents worried about until, in the early 20th century. So even though before people had even a lot more children on average than, you know, the two or three that we tend to have nowadays, parenting manuals or experts never talked about sibling rivalry as a problem. But it became a problem mostly because it came to be seen as a problem mostly because, first of all, because jealousy came to be seen as a problematic emotion. Mm. And second of all, it the task of parents, which always had been, you know, keep your children alive and into adulthood, the task of parents became make your children happy. And so dealing with sibling rivalry and preventing jealousy became a task of parents, which it hadn't been before.
Oh, I see. When we were afraid they might die before they reached adulthood, we didn't concern ourselves with whether they would get along with each other.
No, I mean, that's a big enough worry, right?
Yeah,
like, will my
yeah.
children survive? And so I'm not saying that, you know, it was better to worry about that than it is to worry about whether you are making your children happy. But to be responsible for your child's happiness is quite a responsibility for a parent when you think about it.
So let's talk about what we actually know about birth order effects. You say the first to write about this was Francis Galton. What did he observe about birth order effects?
Yeah, so Francis Galton was this British sort of scientific all-rounder. He later became one of the founders of eugenics, so he's not of unblemished reputation. But back in 1874, he was interested in what determines success in people's lives, and he went about studying the lives of 180 famous scientists of the day. And then he noticed that firstborns were overrepresented in his sample. So his conclusion was, as a firstborn, you stand a higher chance of success in life.
And why did he think that? What did he think might have contributed to that higher success?
So he contributed it completely to primogeniture, which we talked about. So he said, you know, firstborn sons get more opportunities from their parents. They're allowed to study. Maybe in times of, you know, financial stress, parents might take a little bit better care of their firstborn children than of all the rest of them. And they also give them more responsibilities from the start.
So firstborn children ostensibly would reap some benefit from not sharing parents' attention for however many years that is the case. It would seem like secondborn or youngest children would get the same amount of attention on the other end, right?
Yes, it would. Because, oh, you mean so when the firstborn moves out?
Right.
Yeah, that's true, or it could be true. The thing is, though, is that the first couple of years of your life is when, you know, a lot of development happens, and so it's when your brain develops, it's when sort of the basis is laid. So that's why scientists say, you know, those first years are more important than the years at the other end.
So how did the Freud devotee Alfred Adler make birth order really a component of personality psychology?
Yeah, so Alfred Adler came a bit later, so it's more early 20th century, and he said, well, your place in the family doesn't just determine your success because of the way you've been treated by your parents. It determines your personality. And his idea was that firstborns tend to sort of identify more with the adults in the family. And so they become, you know, all those things that we associate with firstborns, more neurotic, but also more responsible. Whereas laterborns or the lastborns tend to be more spoiled. And middle children, he said, were sort of the peacemakers and the most independent of the lot. And it's interesting because he was himself a middle child.
Did he have resentments about having been raised a middle child? Did he feel like he lost out?
I think in the end he felt quite good about it because, you know, he gave him his own position the best credit.
So I do remember being really concerned about sibling rivalry when I was pregnant with my second child. And the only thing my kids really fought about was they were weirdly possessive about food, right? Like who got the bigger cookie mm-hmm. could like start a battle. But they didn't seem to orient their lives around securing my attention at the expense of the other. Do we still overestimate the effects of sibling rivalry?
I think so. Yeah, I think we do. And also, that we'd maybe sort of underestimate the benefits that it might have, in the sense that, you know, rivalry is and jealousy as a feeling are part of life. It's not just something that you might experience towards your siblings, but it's something that you will experience throughout your life. And in a way, a family and a sibling provide a nice training ground to experience those emotions and also to have conflicts and be forced to work them out, because a sibling isn't going to disappear when you fight with them.
Right. So you've got to work it out or else live with the consequences.
Exactly.
So I gather one major challenge in all these studies is that it's hard to directly compare children because they're separated by age, right? So a 6-year-old might seem much more responsible than a 2-year-old in the same family because developmentally they're in very different places.
Yeah, no, totally. And that's also that explains why a lot of people tend to believe birth order effects do exist, because when you have more than one child, you tend to see them at the same time. And then, yeah, you see these differences that are the result of a difference in age, but you might think of them as the result of a difference in birth order. And you could, if you were doing a study, you could control for that by, for instance, studying the first child when they're 6 years old and then, you know, a number of years later, studying the second child when they're 6 years old. But that, you know, that requires a huge investment of resources.
And of course, relying on parents' memories can be tough because we remember in different ways depending on whether it's a first pregnancy and child-rearing experience as opposed to subsequent ones.
Yeah, and also a subsequent child might change the memories that you have of your firstborn because they either remind you of the firstborn or they stand in sharp contrast to the firstborn.
All right, I want to go.
And also,
go ahead.
Sorry, but yeah, a lot of these studies also that looked at the impact of birth order on personality would ask, you know, one person in the family to rate themselves And then to also rate their siblings on these measures of personality, like conscientiousness or openness. But a lot of people tend to internalize the stereotypes around birth order. So an older child who is being examined for a study like this might say, well, I am clearly the more responsible one in our house, because that's sort of a belief that's been reinforced by having been told, from various sources and throughout the years that firstborns are the more responsible ones.
And of course, without necessarily meaning to do so, it seems like parents and other adults in the family almost assign personalities to different kids. They notice what's different between us as opposed to the things we mostly have in common.
Yeah, absolutely. And we call, we name those things. And also we might assign maybe not necessarily personalities, but certain behaviors that are in line with the stereotypes surrounding birth order. So, for instance, when I was pregnant with my son, my second child, someone told me, don't tell your daughter that she will have a playmate because it will be a huge disappointment because, once the second child is born, it will just be a baby and it won't be able to play with her at all. So I thought, oh, that's good advice. So I told her instead, when your brother arrives, he will be so tiny, he doesn't know how to do anything, and you can be his teacher. But in a way, by doing that, I was already telling her, you can be the older and wiser and more responsible one. So even though birth order differences in personality don't exist, we might sort of create differences in behavior.
There is evidence, I can't remember if I read this in the article or the book or both, but mothers tend to think of their firstborns as considerably more intelligent than their secondborns, whether or not there's any real IQ difference at all.
Yeah, so this is a study that I don't think I will ever forget, where they asked, it was done in the US, and they asked parents of who had two children, and they were in high school already, and they asked them, who in of your two kids is the smarter one? And the majority of the parents said that their firstborn was smarter, even though school grades and report cards and so on didn't bear that out. And the explanation, one of the explanations is that is the way in which an age difference between children might be perceived as an intelligence difference. So, your older child might already be able to read and write, and the younger child isn't able to do that just yet. And so you think unconsciously as a parent, oh, the older child is the smarter one.
One thing that turns out to be really toxic in pretty much every case is openly comparing your children. So no matter what, you're not supposed to say, why can't you clean up your room like your big brother? Or why can't you listen nicely to grandma like your little sister?
Yeah. It's I think we all know this, that people are just creatures of comparison. We always constantly compare ourselves to others, and we tend to base our sense of self-worth on sort of how we come out of that equation. And when parents are openly comparing their children, children might sort of start to perceive that as though they are in conflict with each other or in competition with each other. And also, if it's consistently maybe the younger child who's being asked to be as conscientious as the oldest child, they might also start to think that maybe their parents love them less, or think of them as inferior somehow.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Did you worry at all, given all this research that you were doing, that your children would perceive that you loved them differently?
I did. And I did because not because I tended to openly compare them to each other, because I didn't. But I was worried that I might sort of. So that I didn't compare them openly, but I do, there's two children at the same time. And so it's just hard not to compare them, right? To not notice differences or similarities. And also, because they tend to be in different places developmentally or psychologically at different points in time. So there are phases when one child just is more easy. It's just easier than the other one. And so I was worried that I would sort of, maybe through my expressions or my behaviors, give them a feeling that, I tended to prefer one over the other at different points in time. And I'm no longer worried that that's what's happening, because I've sort of learned to sort of take the long view and realize that, things can differ and go up and down, and you might give one more attention at one point and the other one more attention at another point. You can make up for past mistakes. But I did really become aware of this It's just really hard to not compare your children.
I think there was also research in the book that noted that if mothers had poor sibling relationships, they seemed to work harder to make sure that their own children got along well.
Yeah, and mothers who had good sibling relationships tended to, not really try their best in having making their children get along well. And this also resulted in their children having more conflicts and arguments and being less good at solving them than the children of mothers who had really tried, had really tried to help their kids get along. So the way, our childhood experiences really do feed into our parenting experiences.
Lynn, how do children affect the happiness of parents? Do more ch children equal more happiness or more stress or some combination thereof?
And so, this is a question that social scientists have been asking for decades. Sometimes it feels like they've been asking this question with some glee, like, are parents happier than people who don't have children? And then they go and look at, the data, and they say, whoa, parents actually aren't happier than people without children, and sometimes they're even less happy. And this seems to be a puzzle to them because obviously having children requires a lot of investments in terms of time, energy, money, and so on. And so if it doesn't make parents happy, then why do they do it? Of course, the answer might be that we don't have children because we think they'll make them happy, but because we think it'll be a meaningful experience. But in any case, so the researchers also looked at this question of is do more children make parents happier or less happy? And it turns out that with each additional child, parents tend to be definitely a little bit, they experience less of a sort of a happiness peak around the birth than they do with a first child. And also marital stress seems to go up with the number of children.
What are we supposed to do with that?
So one of the studies that I found that looked at the levels of happiness and number of children, they found that when children are younger, you see this, you see that parents tend to be less happy. But then when they are older, people sort of come back to their happiness levels. So it might just be a matter of sitting it out. And again, also it might just be a matter of realizing that having children is not. It's not something that we do because it'll make us happy. It's a very meaningful experience that, has sort of terrible sides and also wonderful sides. And it's not something that you can really compare.
Should we feel guilty if we'll never forget a firstborn's first words or first steps, but we can't remember anything about those events for a later born child? Asking
I
for a
don't think.
friend.
I felt pretty guilty about just the way in which, a firstborn child really can sort of bowl you over as a parent, and a second child just comes with more anticipation and recognition, maybe rather than surprise. And so maybe you might remember sort of the first steps and the first words of your first child also better than the ones of your second child. I don't think we should feel guilty about it. I think sort of the upside for the second child is that they didn't have those bowled over parents, that they had parents who were maybe more, more easygoing, more, able to enjoy the moment as it came.
I promise that I'm not asking you an intrusive question. I'm asking you if you've ever gone through the thought exercise of how your family might be different if you added a third child to the mix.
Yes, we have gone through the thought exercise. I mean, it would definitely be different. I think for us, the conclusion is that it would just take too much energy.
It is. I mean, our kids, I think the way we parent now makes it harder and harder to have a larger family and sort of meet the expectations of 21st century Western society.
Yeah, I mean, we just want to invest so much in our children so that they can get by. And also, what's also different compared to maybe 50 or 100 years ago is that now both parents tend to also work outside of the house. So we have to combine, a career with raising children. It seems like a lot.
How has this all worked for you, if you don't mind my asking, during the pandemic? Did you have your kids at home doing school while you and your partner were trying to make work happen at the same time?
We did. Schools were closed shorter here than in most parts of the US. So we had, I think we had 1 8-week lockdown and then another 8 or 6 week one. But yeah, we were, one was in the bedroom when we built a tiny desk next to our bed, and the other one was homeschooling upstairs.
I mean, it hasn't been easy for anyone, but it does also speak to you, I think, the inherent flexibility of children. You know, we spend a lot of time worrying about getting everything perfect, and often they deal with this stuff better than we expect them to.
They do. They are really quite resilient, often.
So, have you learned anything about how we can all avoid pigeonholing our own children and just letting them be who they are?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I took part in a parenting course, which I hadn't done before. But when I was doing the research for the book, I found a workshop that was about dealing with sibling rivalry, and I thought, okay, let's go. It's research. I'll go. And the woman who taught it, just she gave me such a profound lesson. She said, just when you describe your children, because we were asked to describe our children, and I noticed that I described them in terms of each other, right? So I would say, well, my daughter is the serious is very serious, and my son is more goofy. And then I realized that I was comparing them, and the teacher said, next time you compare them, or whenever you describe your children, try not to look at them at the same time. Just try to look at the child you're talking about, and not think about what you know about the other child. But just to really try and observe your child and not think about everything you think you know about the child. I mean, it's probably one of those lessons that everyone learns at some point in their life, and maybe you learn it, you hear it many times, and there's just this one moment when it finally clicks. But for me, that really helped.
Lynn Beher is a staff writer at the Dutch journalism platform De Correspondent and author of Second Thoughts on Having and Being a Second Child. She wrote recently for Time magazine an article called Does Birth Order Really Determine Personality? Here's what the research says. Lynn, thank you so much for making time to talk with us.
Thank you.
Think is a production of KERA in Dallas. Our team includes Stephen Becker, Paige Phelps, Ana Perez, Nilufer Arsala, and Micaela Rodriguez. You can listen to Think wherever you get your podcasts. As always, I'm Chris Boyd. Have a great day.